Good morning. Today's daf Erev in Lamed Beis. We are on the Mishnah Lamed Alf Lamed Beis, continuing here in the third perek. Our discussion has been a Ruvei Tchumim setting up our Erev in order to move our Makom Shvisa, our point of center. And it obviously continues to do so throughout this third perek. Up until now, our focus has been on the Erev itself, the food. The food that you're going to be putting in your new Makom Shvisa. Now, obviously, the Erev can be done by raglaim. It can be done with your legs, which means to say that you can just simply move to your new Makom Shvisa, to your new point of center, establish that as your home, as your domicile, and then from there you're going to go 2,000 amas. So that's the and you'll be there during the Bein HaShemeshos period, which later this morning we're going to be discussing in more detail as to when you're kona your Makom Shvisa, which is going to be Bein HaShemeshos. But the other way to do it is going to be with food, and by taking two meals worth of food and putting it into your new Makom Shvisa, and the food being there during the Bein HaShemeshos period, so that's going to be another way for you to be kone your Makom Shvisa. What food to use? So that's been the last four blot of Gemara. Let's make that five. Five blot of Gemara since Chav Zayin, really the bottom of Chav Vav Amud Beis. So the Mishnah introduced us to the idea that you could use any type of food that you want, and the we know with notable exceptions. And a lot of other discussions that revolved around the actual food itself, food that you can eat or food that in general somebody can eat. Again, another discussion that we had just recently. Food has to be kosher. It can't be food that is restricted, that is prohibited to eat. That's what we discussed primarily in yesterday's daf. Okay, so our focus has been on the food, and now we're going to be talking here in this Mishnah about the taking of the food and moving it to the Makom Shvisa. Obviously, you could do it yourself. However, you can also appoint an agent, otherwise known as Shlichus. And so the Mishnah over here talks about Shlichus, and for the first half of today's daf, we get to discuss Shlichus. The second half of today's daf, we're going to be starting another Mishnah, and we're going to be talking about the placement of the Erev in a location. The location has to be accessible to you. We're going to get to that later on. Let's start with the Mishnah here on Lamed Alf Amud Beis, HaSholech Eruvo. So you send your Eruv. Near Eruv over here now is going to be a package of food, two meals worth of food. And so you're sending it, Biyad, Cheresh, Shot, V'Katan. So you're sending it with somebody who does not have mental capacity. The three prime examples that are constantly used throughout the Mishnayos and the Gemara of people who do not have their mental faculty. And therefore, they're not a Bendas, and the Mishnah says it's not going to work. Cheresh, somebody who's a deaf mute. Shota, somebody who is mentally deranged, and Katan is a minor, right? Like I say often, mentally deranged, but with a great prognosis. Okay, so the in other words, so these are three people who cannot deliver the Erev. Ovi Yad Mishe Namod Be'Erev, or let's say you give it to somebody, but somebody who doesn't acknowledge the institution of Erev. Rashi says it's a kusi. The Gemara in just a moment is going to say it's a kusi. Okay, we'll get to that in the Gemara. The Gemara is not going to spend much time on that. So ain't no Erev in all these cases. It's not an Erev. The Imam la'achar lekablami menor ze Erev. But then the Mishnah puts in the following clause, and that is that let's say you speak to somebody now who's mentally competent and in general is competent, and you say to that person, look, I just gave my Erev over to Shecher Shart V'Katan, but I do want the Erev to get to a certain location. Would you go ahead and collect it from that person, from the Shecher Shart V'Katan? Or Mishe Namode Be'erev, and then could you then deliver it over to the area that I want to establish as my Makom Shvisa? So under those circumstances, it's going to be an Erev. The Gemara is going to be discussing that in much greater detail in terms of what exactly is the scenario over there. The Katalo, but we start with the Gemara right now. The Katalo, and you mean to tell me that by a Katan, you cannot be sent in order to deliver the Erev, Ahamar, Ravuna, Katan, Govas, Erev? So Rav Huna says that a katan can go ahead and collect the Eruv. And so fine, so it's Rav Huna against the Mishnah, and that's very hard to imagine. Rav Huna is an Amora. So the Gemara says, Lokasha kam be'eruv etchumim kam be'eruv echatzeros. So the Gemara makes a simple distinction between the types of Eruvim that we're discussing. In an Eruv Tchum, that's our Mishnah. Our whole parak is talking about Eruv Tchum. So it makes sense that our Mishnah is talking about Eruv Tchum. And Rav Huna was talking about Eruv Chatzeros. So the difference between Erev Tchum and Erev Chatzeros is the difference between whether a katan can or cannot deliver. What is that difference? So let's take first look at Rashi over here. Rashi writes, I'm reading the Rashi. Eruve Chatzeros de Eruve Rishusaya Ba'amahu. So Rashi describes that in terms of what we are accomplishing with Erev Chatzeros, So all we're doing is that we're associating. We're taking all the members of the chatzer and we're combining them, we're unifying them. But there's no kinyan. It's not a real formal legal acquisition. It is more symbolic in nature in that the chatzer is owned by a group of people, and what we want to do is we want to unify it. So what we do by unification is eruv chatzeros. Everyone makes a contribution of a loaf of bread, collected in a basket. The basket's put in somebody's house. Fine. So all we're doing is unifying. Rashi describes over here, it's not a big deal. Now, I say that in context. It is, of course, a big deal. It's a mitzvah derabbanan. But the actual legal mechanism that's being accomplished over here is not a lot. Rashi describes, I'm rereading the Rashi, eruv rushusayu ba'almahu. All we're doing is just mixing together all the people's properties. But again, it's not a real legal acquisition. Hilkach mimela me'arev. It's done in of itself. The child going around with the basket, door to door, collecting a loaf of bread from every member of the chatzer. What is he doing? Legally, not a whole lot. It kind of happens on its own. The child is just simply collecting the bread. V'afagav de'in maisa katan klom lo ichbalan. Now, the child's action is not significant, but who cares, says Rashi. It doesn't bother us. Kidinan lekaman, we're going to see later in the Masechta, balabai shayashutif im shchinav, ain't tzarich la'arev. We'll see that if, let's say, owners of the chatzer are partners with one another, there's no need for them to make an eruv. So you see over here that when it comes to the eruv, we're just looking to create partnership, but it's not a legal partnership. It's just simply a way of combining everyone together. However, now all that contrasted with eruv etchumim. Rashi continues, aval eruv tchumim aknuye shvi sehu. By eruv tchum, you really are now creating a new home. It's a kinyan in that new location is going to be registered as your home. Now, you're not, even as I say this, by the way, just a full recognition. You're not buying the property. You're not, the transaction over here doesn't require you to do kesef, shtar, chazaka. It's not a kinyan in the sense that you really are making a purchase, but what you are doing now is you're establishing new residence on Shabbos, a new residence for Shabbos. And so for that is a kinyan. That's much more of a kinyan than is Erev Chatzeros. And Rashi goes on to say, V'katan lo alim lemikne. So now that we're looking for more of a formal acquisition, so the katan just simply incapable of doing so, being that he does not have das, he does not have the ability to go ahead and to make that kind of acquisition. So, says Rashi, is the difference between Eruve Chatzeros and Eruve Tchomem, and that's why. For Eruve Chatzeros, child can go around, collect bread from everyone in the chatzer, not a big deal. But when it comes to Eruv Kinyan, Eruv Etchumim, where a Kinyan is necessary, so there the child is not going to be able to do so. Ad Kan Divrei Rashi. For more on this discussion, you can see Tosus over here. Kan Be'eruv Etchumim. He cites Rashi. It's not so crazy about Rashi. However, Tosus notes, the difference is, Lachen Yer Lefarish, Tosfos. Second wide line of Tosos. Lachen yiru lefarish eruv etchumim, hol v'asmuchu akra, chamire, v'lo himne rabbanan, v'lo havi eruv imlo be'omid v'roehu. So Tosos says that when it comes to the eruv etchum, so it is based on a pasuk. We're going to see the drasha a little bit later on in terms of how we know about eruv etchumim. So it is Torah sourced. Now that doesn't mean that it's min ha-Torah, but at least they connect it to a pasuk. So therefore, it's more grounded in a Doraisa, even though it's not a Doraisa. And as a result of that, there's a higher threshold, a higher requirement in terms of you need a bendas in order to deliver it. Okay. And obviously, much more to discuss in terms of the difference between Eruv Etchum and Eruv Echatzeros, but we have now understood the difference between Rav Huna and our Mishnah. We continue now in our Gemara. Obi Yad Misheinu Mode Be'eruv. Or you give it to somebody who does not agree to the institution of Eruv Man. I'm Rav Chista Kusai. So the Gemara says very quickly, very succinctly, we're talking about the Kusim. The Kusim, who are, right, the Gemara discusses them extensively. In the beginning of Maseches Chulin, they get a lot of discussion over there. The Kusim are a group of people who converted. Always a question of whether or not the conversion was sincere, legitimate, or was it because they were forced to convert. History of the Kusim goes all the way back to Bayis Rishon, where they were supplanted with the northern tribes. Northern tribes were removed by Sancheiriv. They were replaced with the Kusim. They were attacked because They were over the Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael, so they were attacked by lions, and they all converted. And it was a long time historical debate whether the conversion was valid or not valid. Anyway, they were around the Jewish people for a very long time. We're going back from Bayis Rishon, and we're continuing now through Bayis Sheni, and now we're already in the Tekufa of the Tanaim and Amoraim, and the Kusim are still there. So they've been around for a long time. And the hallmark of the Kusi, unfortunately, is that they do not subscribe to Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebichsav, they subscribe to. The Gemara in Chulin actually gives them somewhat of a backhanded compliment. The mitzvahs that they do follow carefully and closely. But they don't do everything. And certainly things that are based on Derabbanan, on Chazal, so that they don't follow. And so obviously when it comes to Eruv, so they just simply don't subscribe to the institution of Eruv, and so therefore they cannot be the agent in terms of delivering the Eruv because they themselves don't subscribe to it. Okay. Continuing the Gemara, V'yamamar la'ach l'kab la'amen or is Eruv. Now, he gave it to a cherishot of a katan. Now that in of itself is not going to be good. They can't deliver it. However, if you ask somebody who's competent to go ahead and to collect it from the cherishot of a katan, so that would be just fine. The Gemara now just simply wants to fill in the details of this scene. What exactly happened over here? So the Gemara says, first of all, how do I know that the Cherishot V'Katan actually got to the second person that I appointed, the competent person that I appointed? So Kedam Rav Chista Bomed V'Roeyu Achanami Bomed V'Roeyu. Rav Chista in another context said that you need to see the transaction. Meaning you sent the Cherishot V'Katan and you now actually witnessed the Cherishot V'Katan actually make it to the second person that you appointed. Okay, v'lechush dima lo shakol minei. How do I know that there was a handoff? So the Gemara says, Kedam Rav Yechiel, chazaka shliach osa shlichusa. Hachanami chazaka shliach osa shlichusa. Fine, so the Gemara says that, look, you didn't see the handoff, but you know a handoff occurred. Because once you know that there was a meeting between there was a meeting between Cherishot V'Katan and the second person that I appointed, so then the second person that I appointed, he's competent, he's a bendas, and he's going to do what I ask him to do. We have a chazaka, shliach does what he's going to do, what I ask him to do. Now, Rav Chista and Rav Yechiel, who both made a comment. Rav Chista's comment was, you saw them get together. And Rav Yechiel's comment is, we can assume the shliach does what I asked him to do. These comments were not originally made in our Mishnah, right? In both cases, the Gemara says, kid da amar, right? Like he said elsewhere. So where's the elsewhere? And we're borrowing the ideas over here, but where did they say it principally? Ahayim Ditanya, the Gemara says on the following. Nasna Lepil Vaholicha. Lekof Vaholicho Ein Ze Erev. You give it to an elephant to deliver the Erev. You give it to a monkey to deliver the Erev, so that's no good. Okay, in other words, obviously, the principal example of somebody with no das whatsoever. Now, V'im Amar La'acher L'Kablo. Now, if you ask somebody else, competent person, human, to go ahead and accept it from the elephant or from the monkey, so Haymenar is a Eruv, so that's going to be a good Eruv. So it's basically the same setup as our Mishnah. Over there, though, we're using examples of an entity that's not human, has no das whatsoever. And V'dilma lo mematile, and now we're just a follow-up questions, but we already know the answers. How do I know that the elephant actually got to the person that I appointed? So I'm Rav Chista, ba'omid v'roehu. So I saw that the second person I appointed, in this case, it's really the first person, the principal carrier of the Eruv, was either an elephant or a monkey. But anyway, how do I know that the person that I appointed actually made contact with the elephant or the monkey? So I saw that. V'dimala mekabala minei, how do I know there was a handoff? So I'm Rav Yechiel, chazak ashliach osa shlichusa. Once I saw them get together, so now I can rely on the fact that I asked my shliach to do something, he will do something. That's a chazakah, that's a halachic assumption that we make. I'm Rav Nachman, and so now for a good part of today's daf, for now from here to basically basically to the next Mishnah, so we're going to have a larger discussion about this idea that a chazakah, we have this halachic assumption that when I ask a shliach to do something, he will do what I ask him to do. I'm Rav Nachman b'shal Torah in chazak ashliach usa shlichuso. Rav Nachman's position is as follows, that if it's a din d'oraisa, so then we cannot be so confident that the shliach does what I ask him to do. B'shal sofrim chazak ashliach usa shlichuso. But when it comes to a din derabanan, so then we can assume that Ishlich will do what I ask him to do. So Rav Nachman, obviously over here, is limiting in this chazaka. Meaning, yes, when I ask somebody to do something, I have some confidence, I have a level of confidence that he's going to do it, but the level of confidence is not going to be so strong that it's going to work in the case of Daraisa. In the case of Daraisa, I can't just assume that he did what I asked him to do, but I have to know that he did what he asked him to do. How exactly, according to Rav Nachman, are we going to get verification? Is the Shliach coming back saying that he did it going to be sufficient? Seemingly the answer is yes. It's difficult to imagine that he would need corroboration of two witnesses on top of that. But anyway, that's Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman limits the scope of this chazaka only to a din derabanan. Interesting, Rashi on the top of Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, Rashi writes, Bishul Sofrim, Samchinen Achezka Shliach, on a din derabanan, we're going to rely on the Shliach. So now, in terms of describing the difference between Daraisa and derabanan, so one could just simply say that by Daraisa, obviously, we need a higher threshold, we need a higher level of confidence, because we're operating with a din Daraisa. By din derabanan, which is lower level, obviously, whenever we say that, we have to attenuate that with the idea that going against Chazal is dangerous. The Gemara earlier in our Masechta talked about the dangers of going against Dini Derabanan and Mamre Chazal and Takana Sing Zeres Chazal. But nevertheless, you could say that it's on a lower level. We're Makel by a Suffolk, so we're going to be Makel over here as well. Interesting. Rashi writes, Samchina Cheska Shliach, Di'i Nami Lo Aved, Lo Chamer Isura Kigon Eruvet Chumen. Okay, so Rashi says very clearly that let's for a moment imagine that the Shliach didn't do it. So Rashi says, okay, but the Isser is not that strict. Like, for example, Erev Tchumim. Okay, so Rashi over here is saying that, it's pretty clear from Rashi, that the reason why we could be more lenient by Derabanan is because the consideration of if he didn't do it, but at least we're starting off with a lesser of an Isser. It's a difficult svara to follow within Rashi. But anyway, that's all Shitas Rav Nachman. On the other side of all this is Rav Sheshes, as we are now on the top of Lamed Beis Amud Aleph. Rav Sheshes Amar Echad Zev Echad Zev Chazaka Shliach Chotzer Shlichuso. Rav Sheshes says no. This chazaka is an assumption. It's a halachic assumption that we can presume that when I ask a shliach to do something, he will do what I ask him to do. There doesn't have to be follow up. There doesn't have to be verification. There doesn't have to be a confirmation that yes, I did what you asked me to do. Once I ask him to do something and I sent him, so then we can assume that he did what I asked him to do. And Rav Sheshes says I got many proofs to this idea. And over the course of this first Amud of today's daf, we're going to go over the three proofs of Rav Sheshes. I'm Rav Sheshes, Mina Amin Allah, so proof number one. Based on the following Dinan in a Mishnah. Mishakarav HaOmer Hutar Chadash Miyad, V'Rechokim Hutar Mechatzos Hayom Ve'Elech. On the 16th day of Nisan, so the bringing of the Karban Omer, which allows all grains that grew this past year to be eaten prior to the bringing of the Omer. So the grains that grew are considered chadash, and they're usur, minatorah. But after the Karban Omer is brought, so now the chadash is going to be mutter. So, Misha Karav HaOmer, from the time that the Omer is actually brought, so the Karban Omer, that's the matir. That's what allows the eating of the chadash, hutter. Chadash is now allowed to be eaten. In fact, in terms of its status, it's no longer considered chadash, it's now considered yashan. And that happens once the carbon is brought, effective immediately. Now, you're outside of Yerushalayim and you don't know. The ha-rechokim, those people who are at a distance, and they don't know when the carbon omer was brought. So what can they assume? Mutar mechatzos hayom ve'elach. So, from midday onward, on the 16th day of Nisan, so once the clock strikes noon, so now they could say, okay, it's chatzos, Kohanim did it already. And a number of interesting assumptions over here. Basically, we're looking at the Kohanim Ashlichim, right? There are appointees, there are agency in terms of doing the avoda. It's an interesting way to look at it. The Gemara and other places, in fact, does look at it that way, that they are serving as our shliach. On top of that, however, it's certainly a curious comparison because we know that the Kohanim in of themselves have a mitzvah to do the avoda. It's not just that they're doing it because they're our agent, which is in fact true. They're doing it because they're required to do it. They have an obligation to do it. So the comparison is interesting. It's not exactly comparable to our case over here, but Rav Sheshes says it's certainly a din daraisa, and we are relying on the agency. There was no confirmation. We didn't get an email, right? Or there was no mass text. The Kohanim offer the Karban Omer, And we can just simply be assured of the fact that they did it. And so we have a chazakah. It supports Rav Sheshes. The Isser Chadash is in Isser Daraisa Vektani Rechokim Mutar Mechatzos Hayom Ve'elech. And those that are at a distance at noon, they can go ahead and assume that the Kohanim did what they were supposed to do. And so what do we have over here? We have this chazakah on a din d'oraisa. It's a support to Rav Sheshes. It's seemingly a really good one. So Rav Nachman would counter with the following. So Rav Nachman would say that case cannot be generalized. Because in that case over there, you had the Beis Din sitting right by the Kohanim, right? You had the Lishkas HaGazis in the Beis HaMikdash, right there. And so therefore, what you had over there in that case is oversight. And not just any oversight, oversight of the Beis Din. That's different. And therefore, from there, you can't generalize to generally how we can assume the agency, the Shliach, is going to perform. So the Ika D'Amrei, now what we're going to do is we're just going to go over this back and forth. But the starting point is going to be from Rav Nachman, where in this second version, we're going to start by saying that all this is a support for Rav Nachman. And then we're just simply going to argue in the other direction towards Rav Sheshes. It's basically the same discussion. We learn time alafi, she yodin shein based in misatzen bo, based in hudalo misatzen bo, hashlich misatzen bo. So we're starting off by saying, look, in that case over there, that's a case where you have Beis Din, where you have oversight. So that's why that case is different. But over here, we're talking about where there's no oversight, and so therefore the chazaka doesn't work. And Rav Sheshes will counter Amalacha Beis Din ad palge diyuma shliach kumayu kol yomai. So Rav Sheshes will say in his defense, no, the oversight does help, but it helps only a little bit. Meaning in general, we can assume that a shliach does exactly what I ask him to do. But over there in that case, the oversight of the Beis Din just simply allows me to make the chazaka, the assumption, even quicker. Meaning because there's a Beis Din over there, we know the Kohanim are going to take care of it even by midday. Without the Beis Din, without the oversight, Kohanim are still going to do it. I just would have to wait till the end of the day. Amar Rav Sheshes, Mena Amin Allah. Rav Sheshes says, okay, here we go now, proof number two, that we have a chazaka that shliach osa shlichuso, and it would be true not only by din d'rabbanan, but even by din d'oraisa. And here we are now in our second proof, to Tanya. Ha'isha sheyesh aleha, leida, o ziva. So let's say a woman has concluded her birth, meaning when I say concluded, we're talking about the minyan, the malos. She counted the requisite days, 40 for a boy, 80 for a girl. And now she goes to the Beis HaMikdash to offer karbanos. At the end, on the 41st or 81st day, depending whether it was a boy or a girl, she's in the Beis HaMikdash, she's bringing karban, her karban leida, and then once the karban is brought, now she is allowed to go ahead, enter into the Beis HaMikdash, in the area of the Beis HaMikdash, eat karbanos herself, if she's a bas kohen, eat truma, etc., etc. Oh, ziva, or let's say she was a zava gadola, same story. For her, but it would same story, meaning she has to bring karbanos. For her, it would be on day 8 after her shiv nikiyim. Anyway, so mivia maus venosenes bishofar v'tovelas v'ocheles bikashim la'erev. So, what does she have to do in terms of overseeing that her karbanos are brought? Not a whole lot. In fact, she doesn't have to oversee. She just simply has to deposit money in the pushka. There was a pushka in the Beis HaMikdash. It's called the shofar, based on its shape. She puts the money in, and then by day's end, she'll know that the Kohanim took out the money, transferred that money into purchased with that money her karbanos, which will be a pair of birds. One's going to be a chatas, the other one's going to be an ola. And by that evening, without any confirmation, she will know that her karbanos were brought. So again, the Kohanim here are viewed as their shliach. And again, without a confirmation, she knows that the Kohanim did exactly what they asked her, what she asked them to do. My time, and over here we're talking about a din d'oraisa. The obligation for her to bring a karban is a din d'oraisa. Her allowance to eat karbanos, that's obviously a d'oraisa. If she was in a state of tumah, she was still in a maintained state of tumah. Technically speaking, her tumah is a tful yom, but that is still tameh. And she were to eat karbanos in that state, that would be an issa d'oraisa. So over here we're talking about dine d'oraisa. And yet, we are relying on the Kohanim. That is all a wonderful proof for Rav Sheshes. V'Rav Nachman Hasam Kidrashmaya Damar Rashmaya Chazaka in Beis Din Shel Kohanim Omdim Misham Achyachlu Kol Maus Shebeshofer. And Rav Nachman will tell you that case over there is not general. We can't generalize from that scenario because what do you have over there? You also have oversight as well. You have Beis Din Shel Kohanim. So you have an institution of the Beis Din of the Kohanim sitting there, making sure that things are taken care of. So you have oversight over there. You have managers over there. And so therefore, you can't translate that to a simple case where I appoint a shliach to do something, and he's not being managed, and there is no oversight. So I'm Rav Sheshes Menami Nala. Here we are now with the third proof for Rav Sheshes. Ditanya and the following brisa. Ha'omer lechaveru, say ulekot lecha teinim mitenasi. Ocho mehemarayu maasrim vaday. I say over to a friend, look, go out to my field, right? It happens to be that everything's ripe, it's beautiful, and here we're talking about figs, and go ahead and collect as many figs as you want. And you can go ahead and you can eat it. Now, in terms of snacking on those figs, no problem whatsoever. The figs were just taken off of the tree. The figs have not been processed yet, so they're not yet subject to the requirements of Trumas Maestros. And so therefore, if he wants to eat a Chilas Arai, he may do so. However, if let's say now he processes those figs, he brings them in and he goes through the processing of the figs, now they're Chayv and Trumas Maestros. So this person now, ma'asron vadai, he takes the trumas ma'isros with a definitive nature, meaning he can assume that nobody else has been mafresh trumas ma'isros. Okay, that is case number one. Case number two in the brisa, malolacha kalkala zeh te'enim etenasi. So let's say, same case, but with one noted difference. Here, he hands the guy a basket. He says, go ahead, help yourself to the figs on the field, but take a basket full of those figs. And so now the homeowner, the field owner, knows exactly how many figs were taken because he gave him a basket. So now we know the amount. So, ocho mehem arai. So again, snacking is not a problem because it's not yet chayv and shumas ma'isros. Ume'asrin demai. However, when taking off shumas ma'isros, he doesn't do so in a definitive nature, but only as a stringency, only as a chumrah. Basically like what we do with demai. Meaning that really the truth of the matter is that the homeowner himself already took off trumas ma'isros. And why? In other words, as opposed to the first case where he didn't? Yeah, in the first case he didn't because he didn't know how much this person took. He didn't give him any kind of indication of you should be taking this amount, presumably as much as you want. Over here, or maybe he just simply said to him, take a little. But he didn't know how much he took. Over here, he knows exactly how much he took. The only way you could take off trumas ma'isros is if you know amount. In the second case, the owner of the field knew the amount. And so therefore, the assumption is that the owner of the field probably took off trumas ma'isros. And as we're going to see in just a moment, who is this person that he's allowing to go out into the field? Well, if the person himself is a chaver, so he certainly will take off trumas ma'isros. But if the person that he sent out to the field was an amaris, he himself is not going to be taking off trumas ma'isros. And so therefore, the owner of the field is going to make sure the trumas ma'isros were taken off. Okay, fine. Now, that's true if it was an amaris who went ahead and was collecting. That's the one who was given permission to go out to the field. However, if it's a chaver, so eino tzarech la'aser, so there's no requirement to take off ma'isr. Sorry, let me do that again. Let me do it even better. Over here, the Medvar Mamorim is talking about who the owner of the field is. If the owner of the field is a Amaretz, so then you have to take off Trumas Maestros as if it were Demai. And it pretty much is Demai, because the owner of the field is an Amaretz. However, if the owner of the field is a Chaver, so then according to Rebbe, there is no requirement for you whatsoever to take off Trumas Maestros. You're totally good. Because you can be rest assured that the owner of the field took off Trumas Maestros. Again, we're talking about the second case where we know the amount. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Amar by Medvar Mamor and Ba'amaretz. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no. Also the same provision that the Brisa over here is talking about where the owner of the field is an Amaretz. Ava b'chaver eino ochel ashi yaser. Lefi shalom nechshedu chaverim l'trom shalom en amukav. If the owner of the field was a chaver, so Rabbi Shimon Gamliel goes in the opposite direction. And his argument is, there's no way that owner of the field is going to be mafresh trumas ma'isros. Why wouldn't he? Because consider, we have a halacha, that when you are being mafresh trumas ma'isros, the portion that you are taking off as truma, as ma'iser, has to be right next to the other part. That's what's called min hamukaf. And this halacha of min hamukaf, now it's not ma'akev, in other words, it's not an essential halacha, but nevertheless, it is the mitzvah lechatchila of how to be mafresh trumas ma'isros. So on one hand, the chaver is obviously interested in being mafresh shumas and maisos. On the other hand, there's this halacha of minamukov. And over here, if you're out in the field and you're taking a basket, and now you go ahead and you go home, so we're never having a situation of hekef. We're never having the basket which he took being proximate to the other produce, the other figs that the owner of the field had. And so what Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is arguing is that our chaver is not going to be taking off shumos and maisos because he only would do it in the ideal way, which is minamukaf. We don't have this ideal way, and therefore he wouldn't do it. Okay, and what's Rebbe's counter argument to that? We're going to get to that a little bit later on. Now, Amar Rebbe Nirin Divrei Midivrei Abba. Now, parenthetically over here, I should have made this biographical note, but it's not too late. And that is, who's debating over here? Rebbe or Shimon Gamliel? Rebbe Shimon Gamliel happens to be none other than Rebbe's very own father. In of itself, super interesting. The idea that you can just simply go and argue directly against your father, which the Gemara in Kiddushim, when talking about the Hilchos, Kibud Av V'Em, so one of the things the Gemara mentions over there is that you cannot argue with your father. You can't. The Gemara over there says Kiddushim, you can't even agree with your father, right? As if he needs your approval, okay? And so, our Gemara over here is a bit of an issue over there, but let's leave that out as that's not our principal topic. Our principal topic over here is, when you were given permission to go ahead and collect the figs from the field, and the owner of the field was a chaver, so what do you assume? Rebbe says what you could, and we know the amount that you took. He gave you a basket, and he knows the amount. So Rebbe's of the position that you could assume that he took off chumos and maisos. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says just the opposite. You could assume that he didn't take off chumos and maisos. Now, Amar Rebbe, continuing with a commentary by Rebbe on this machlokas. Nirin devarai mi devarai abba. And Rebbe says, look, I think, obviously he thinks he's right, but he's now comparing and contrasting his position to that of his father's position. Mutav sheyichshedu chaver mletrom shalom en amukav velo yachil la'amei ha'aretz tvalim. He says, look, it's true that if the a portion that I'm taking off Shumos and Maisos is not right next to the other part of the Tevel, which I'm now rectifying, I'm being Misakein. So it's true, it's not the ideal way to take off Shumos and Maisos. On the other hand, Lo Yachil Olam Haaretz Tevalim. But who did I give the basket to? Presumably I gave it to an Am Haaretz. And I don't want him eating Tevel. And so I will sacrifice the ideal way of being Mafish Shumos and Maisos to make sure that the Am Haaretz doesn't eat the figs in a state of tevel. So ad kan lo pligiela demar saver nechshedu mar saver lo nechshedu. Now over here, the only debate that exists between Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel is this idea of would the owner of the field be suspect of not being mafresh shumos and maisos in the ideal manner. That's the only issue over here. If you took that out of the equation, what would we say regarding the homeowner? Who in this case, by the way, is the shliach, meaning he's the agent who's being mafresh shumos and maisos on behalf of the person that he gave the basket to. So what do we say? Aval kolei amal cheska shliachos shlichuso. So under these circumstances, we say that a shliach does a shlichus. And over here, it's a din d'oraisa. Now, we get to focus on this point for just a moment. It's a din d'oraisa. What is a din d'oraisa? Taking off shumos and maisos is a din d'oraisa. That part's true. But what's the produce in question over here? The produce is figs. It's not grapes. It's not olives. And it's not one of the five grains. Is that a din d'oraisa? So if you ask Rashi and you ask Tosfos throughout Shas, so they will tell you, no. The din d'oraisa of Trumas and Maestros is only on grapes, olives, and the five grains. And that's it. So if you ask Rashi and Tosfos, is this a din d'oraisa? So they would say no. And so the Rashi over here just doesn't address it. Tosfos does. Tosfos is bothered. So Alpha Gav, bottom Tosfos on the Amud. Avagav de Meiser Peres Midrabanan Vrav Nachman Moda de Bishal Sofrim Chazaka Shlichos Shlichuso Kaven de Iker Shame Meiser Min HaTorah Chashiv Le Kishal Torah. So Tosfos over here has an interesting take on how this is a din d'oraisa. The general mitzvah of Trumas and Meisers is a din d'oraisa. So over here we're going to consider this like a din d'oraisa vis-a-vis our assumptions that we would have been making regarding the Shlich Osa Shlichuso. Admittedly, that's difficult. It's a difficult take, but you have to say something. Meaning, if I subscribe to the idea that Hafrasha Strumas and Maisos on figs is a Dinda Rabban and not a Dinda Raisa, how is this all a proof for Rav Sheshes? Okay, so we went through Tosos. If you're the Rambam, you have no problem with this Gemara whatsoever. You're very happy. The Rambam says that all fruit are chayv and Shumas and Maisos min haTorah. So for the Rambam, this is a wonderful Gemara. This would certainly support his position. Anyway, Rav Nachman, back to the Gemara. So all this was a good proof for Rav Sheshes. What would Rav Nachman tell you? So Rav Nachman asked him, Rav Chanina, Chuzah, Dam Rav Chanina, Chuzah, Chazaka hu al chaver, Sheina Mosi, Dava Sheina Masukan, Mitachas Yado. So the Gemara says, Rav Nachman will tell you, counter consideration. And that is that we're not talking about just Stam, a person, we're talking about a chaver. Somebody who's really careful about his performance of halacha, and specifically when it comes to the agricultural laws of hafrasha strumas amaisos. And so over here, you cannot generalize from this case over here. So, okay, and that pretty much ends it. We just went through three proofs, all seemingly a proof for Rav Sheshes. And in the three proofs, so Rav Nachman gave a counter-argument why these aren't necessarily proofs for Rav Sheshes. And so we are almost over, finished with our first sugya, but just a little bit more to go in terms of wrapping up our discussion regarding Rebbe and Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. So Amar Mar Bamed Var Mamorim Ba Maaretz Aval B'Chaver Ochel Ve'Einu Tzarech La'aser Divrei Rebbe. Hi Ama Aretz Dekamerle Leman. So the Gemara says now, in terms of the owner of the field being an Ama Aretz, and he's now giving the basket and saying, he's giving permission to the to another person to go ahead and to collect from his field. Now the Am Haaretz give the basket to whom? So Elam the Kamar La Am Haaretz Chavrei Maaser and Dermai Mitzayis. So is it the owner of the field being an Am Haaretz, and he gave it to another person who himself is an Am Haaretz? And now think about what we just said in terms of the halacha. The halacha is that now you have to be mafrish as if it were demai. The Gemara says, wait 1 second. The owner of the field is an Am Haaretz, so he has demai status, meaning any produce that comes out of his hand is demai. Why? Because of the possibility that he didn't take off Trumas HaMaisos. If the recipient of the basket is also an Am Haaretz, aren't we there at the same problem? Meaning, what are we saying? We're saying to him, oh, you have to be mafrish as if it were demai. He'd laugh at you. He'd say, what do you mean? I'm the same Am Haaretz. Much like you suspected his produce being demai, you're going to suspect that my produce is also demai. And I have to take off as a chomer? Get out of here. Mitzayis, he's not going to listen to you. Ela ba'am haaretz dekamer lechaver. So the Gemara says, fine. So the owner of the field was an Am Haaretz, and the basket that he gave it to was a chaver. Okay, so Gemara says, ema seifa. But then what happens in the Braisa as we go on is that we're not consistent. Because the Braisa then goes on to record near in Divrei Me Divrei Abba Motiv She Yichshedu Chaverim LeShom Shalom and Amukah VaAl Yachilu LaAmei HaAretz Tevalim. The basket in the latter case of the Braisa was clearly given to an Am Haaretz. So Amei Haaretz my Bayi Hasam. What do you mean? What's going on over there? So Amar Ravina Reisha BaAm Haaretz Shamar LaChaver Sefer BaChaver Shamar LaAm Haaretz. So VaChaver Achir Shomo. So Ravina says here's what happened. What happened was is that in the first case, we're talking about the Am Haaretz giving the basket over to a chaver and telling him to go out to the field and help yourself. And in that case, again, the chaver has to take off Trumas HaMaisos as if it were demai. In the latter case of the Braisa, we're talking about a chaver who gives the basket to an Am Haaretz, and there's another chaver standing by overhearing the conversation. Now, Rebbe Sava, Rebbe's of the position, as now we turn to the top of the Amud Beis, Sava Oso Chaver Ochel, the Einu Tzarech La'aser, Devada Isure Ma'aser, Hahu Chaver, Kama Ilave. And so what Rebbe's position is that, look, the Chaver, the owner of the field, gave the basket to the Am Haaretz, told him to go ahead and to collect. Another Chaver was sitting by, overhearing the conversation. And now, when the Am Haaretz gets off the field, this other Chaver, the one listening in, so can he help himself to the figs of the basket? Rebbe would say yes. Because again, we start off with the assumption that once a chaver hands over that basket to the Am Haaretz, he knows that the Am Haaretz is not careful about Trumas HaMaisos. And so the chaver is going to take off Trumas HaMaisos. The owner of the field is going to take off Trumas HaMaisos. Albeit in an unideal way, it's Eino Min HaMukav, but still, he wants to protect the Am Haaretz from not violating Isurim of eating Tevel. And that's all Shitas Rebbe. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, on the other hand, we're three lines down. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Omer lo yuchal ad shiaser lefish lo nechshedu chaverim lichum shalom and amukav. And then Rav Shimon Gamliel says, look, it's not ideal. A chaver will not be mafresh from maestros if it's not an ideal way of doing so. V'amalei Rebbe mutzav shiachshedu chaverim lichum shalom and amukav ayachilu amei aretz tevalim. And then the Gemara just simply wraps up with the Rebbe says, look, my consideration is stronger. Meaning, yes, it's not ideal. But I don't want the Amorites to go ahead and eat tevel. B'mai kemiflegi, Rebbe Tzavar, nichalei l'chaver delavid hui suri kalila v'lo lavid amaretz yisuri rabba. And so the Gemara over here just now articulates that for Rebbe, yes, it's unideal. Right? You have to, not have to. You really should be being mafrit shumas amaisos min amukov. That's true. However, the consideration over here of letting the Amorites go ahead and eat tevel, that and preventing him from violating that iser is going to significantly overweigh the fact that I am being mafresh from Masa Maestros in an unideal fashion. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Savar, Nichalei l'chaved l'aved Amorites Yisur Rabba, V'yu afilu Yisur Kalila lo l'aved. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, look, as far as I'm concerned, I want to perform the halacha in the most ideal sense. And don't ask me to compromise on my performance of the halacha, in this case being mafresh umas amaisos min amukov. Don't ask me to compromise it just so I can save somebody from violating an iser. It's his responsibility to take off umas amaisos, and I don't need to compromise on the way I perform the mitzvah just so to save somebody else from violating an avera. Okay, and understand that this is a difficult situation. It's a difficult issue, and it's a machlokas in terms of what's preferable. But for a moment, let's just, I know we have a little bit more Mishnah to go through and Gemara, but for a moment, however, just such an interesting discussion Tosfos has over here on the top of the Amud Beis, which is as follows. Let's just focus on Rebbe for a moment. Rebbe says that I'm going to sacrifice just a little bit in order so that the Amarets that I allowed to collect from my field can go ahead and eat the produce, and I'll save them from violating an Isser. And I'm going to be sacrificing just a little bit. I'll be violating an Isser Kalila, a light Isser, in that I am not being mafresh in the ideal manner. Okay, that's what we get from our Gemara over here, according to Shitas Rebbe. On the other hand, Tosfos points out, we go back to the beginning of Masechta Shabbos. Okay, so it's been some time ago in terms of Daf, right? Over a half a year ago. But we go back to the beginning of Masechta Shabbos and Daf Dalet, where there, somebody left a bread on the oven right before Shabbos. And it was baking. And if it continues to bake, so that person now would be in violation of Bishul B'Shabbos. So what I could do is what's called Ridiyas HaPas. I can go ahead and I could take the dough off the wall of the oven. The Gemara describes it as being a Chachma. It's not a Malacha, but it's an Isser Derabbanan to do so. So as Shabbos has entered, can I violate the Isser Derabbanan, but by me doing so, that would save my friend from violating the Isser Bishul D'Oraisa of Shabbos? And the Gemara over there unequivocally says, no, I can't violate an Isser D'Rabbanan so that my friend would be safe from violating an Isser D'Oraisa. And so what we have over here is a wonderful discussion of Tosfos, in that the Gemara Shabbos over there would not agree with Rebbe over here. Rebbe does say that it's critical to sacrifice lighter Isurim. I know that's a challenging statement, but that it's critical to sacrifice lighter Isurim rather than have a friend of mine violate an Isser D'Oraisa. And meanwhile, the Gemara Shabbat says, no, don't do that. Don't violate the lighter Isser of Ridiyas HaPas so that I'll save my friend from violating an Isser D'Oraisa. So I'm looking at the time right now, and I want to finish the daf. Anyway, Tosfos has three different ways to approach this problem and make a distinction between the case over here, according to Rebbe, and the case over there in Shabbos with the Ridiyas HaPas. See Tosfos for a discussion and three different ways to address the situation. Anyway, we're going to continue in the Mishnah. Nasnu be'ilan lamala mi'asar tfachim. Here we're talking about accessibility. The Erev has to be in a place where it's accessible, both physically and halachically. And remember, at what point in time now do I acquire the Erev? During the Benesh Mashos period. So when we talk about halacha considerations, we also have to include Shabbos halacha as well. And so the Mishnah starts off, Nasu mi'ilan lamala mi'asar tfachim. If I put it in a tree above 10 tfachim. So ein eruvo, eruv, the eruv is no good. Lamata mi'asar tfachim, eruvo, eruv, but if I put it below 10 tfachim, so then the eruv would in fact be good. Nasu bebor Afilo amok me ama aruva eruv. If I put in the pit, and even if it's 100 amas deep, the eruv would in fact be a good eruv. Okay, so much to discuss here in the Mishnah. We really don't know what's going on at this point in time with the tree, and the Gemara discusses it immediately. Yosef Rabbi Chia bar Abba, Rabbi Yosef, Rav bar Nosan, Yosef, Rav Nachman Gabayhu, Yosef Kamri. So the situation that is commonly set up throughout the Gemara, which is that I have a collection of Amoraim, and they're all sitting in front of Rav Nachman. And now they're having the following discussion. And we know what's going to happen at the end of the discussion. Rav Nachman's going to comment. Now, in terms of what Rav Nachman's going to go, in terms of agreeing with them or disagreeing with them, so, well, let's see. So, Hai Ilan Dekai Hecha. So, this tree, where is it situated exactly? Ilan Dekai Birshus HaYachid, Mali Lamala Miyod, Lamata, Mali Lamata, Rishus HaYachid, Ola Adla Rakia. If the tree is already in a Rishus HaYachid, what's the problem? The Erev was situated below 10 Tfachim of the tree, above 10 Tfachim of the tree, doesn't matter. If the surrounding area around the tree is a Rishus HaYachid, the Rishus HaYachid, Ola Larakia, it just goes up ad infinitum. Meaning if there's no roof to the Rishus HaYachid, there doesn't have to be a roof to the Rishus HaYachid, there just has to be walls that are surrounding. Once you have that, so then the status of Rishus HaYachid goes up. And the tree that's in this Rishus HaYachid, even if I put the basket above 10 Tfachim, so it's still in a Rishus HaYachid. It shouldn't make a difference. So Ela Dekai Rishus HaRabim. So it has to be that the tree right now is planted and is right next to a Rishus HaRabim. It's in a Rishus HaRabim. Now, the Miskavin Lishbos Hecha. So far, we got to step one. Where's the tree? In a Rishus HaRabim. Step number two. Where did you have intent to make your Makom Shvisa? In the tree or in the Rishus HaRabim? Now, you could make your Makom Shvisa in Rishus HaRabim. Albeit, it's strange, but it doesn't matter. Meaning, you're just simply moving your domicile. Okay, should you be moving your new domicile right into Rishus HaRabim? It's ill-advised, but you could do it. Now, the Gemara says, now, under those circumstances. So, Ve'elad Dekai Rishus HaRabim, Demiskavim L'shpos Hecha, Ilem Demiskavim L'shpos L'mala, Huve Eruva B'makom Echad. Now, if you put the basket above 10 Tfachim, and now, that's a Rishus HaYachid, and your intent was to be Shoveis there as well, fine. So you and your Eruv are in the same location. So that's called accessibility. That's fine. So Ella must be Niskavim L'shpos Lemata. So the Gemara says, well, it must be that what your intention was is to make your Makom Shvisa in the Rishus HaRabim. So the Gemara says, and under those circumstances, so now you wanted to make your Makom Shvisa in the Rishus HaRabim. And right now the Eruv is in the tree, which is a Rishus HaYachid. Again, the tree we're assuming is an area of Dalet by Dalet. And you put it above 10 Tfachim in the tree. Now you put it in the area, which is now Rishus HaYachid. And so now what does that make that Eruv to you? Inaccessible. Why? Because in order to just simply take the Eruv down, it's not that difficult. Above 10 Tfachim is only 3 feet high. So, but to take the Eruv down, you'd be transferring from the tree area, which is a Rishus HaYachid, to the street where you wanted to make your Makom Shvisa, which is a Rishus HaRabim. That's an Issa D'Raisa. And now that's called inaccessible. So the Gemara says, V'hakam Mishamish B'ilan. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. Right? Probably something you were wondering from the beginning of the discussion, which is, aren't you making usage of a tree? So the Gemara says, V'olam Dekai B'Rishus HaRabim, V'Niskavim L'Shpos L'Mata. So the Gemara says, okay, but we'll resolve that. We're talking about a case where your interest was to make your Makom Shvisa in the Rishus HaRabim, and the Erev was in the tree, v'Rebbi hi, and all this is going according to Shita's Rebbe. Da'amar kol davashu mishum shvus lo gazru alav ben hashmashas. When am I acquiring the Erev during the ben hashmashas period? And Rebbe's of the position, we just mentioned this machlokas recently in the daf, that Rebbe's of the position that during the ben hashmashas period, one can, under certain circumstances, one can violate Isuri Derabanan. Ein Shvus, I'm sorry, let me read it accurately. Kol davar shehu mishum shvus, lo gazru alav ben hashmashas. So anything which is a Isur Derabanan, so that Xer does not exist during the ben hashmashas period. The simplest explanation is that the ben hashmashas period is a Suffolk, and now we're talking about a Suffolk on an Isur Derabanan. Okay, we're going to be Mako. That's the simple explanation. But anyway, so we subscribe to Rebbe. So the fact that you're using the tree during the ben hashmashas period, that doesn't qualify as being inaccessible, because we subscribe to Rebbe. transferring from the tree of Rishus HaYachid to the ground, which is the Rishus HaRabim, so that's an Issa D'Oraisa. That creates the problem. Good, all this was how the students analyzed our Mishnah. Amalei Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman said, Yi Asher. He gave Yishar Koach, that was excellent. V'chein Amar Shmuel, Amalei, Patrisu Bei Kulei Hai, Inunami Achika Patriba. So, and Shmuel said, we explained it the same way. Ela Hachi Amrulei. Now, this is what they said to him. Kavisulei Begemara, do you have a tradition? Do you have a Mesorah? Meaning, yes, on our own, that's the analysis that we arrived at. But do you have any kind of Mesorah that this is in fact so? So Amrulei, he says back to them, I have a Mesorah. Itmar Nami, I'm Rav Nachman, I'm Shmuel. And here we have it as a statement made by Rav Nachman in the name of Shmuel. Hachabi Ilan Homid Birshos Rabbin Maskin and Gavoa Savarachav Arba'a. So we have a tree, the tree's in the Rishus HaRabim. The tree itself's dimensions are 4x4 in area, and 10 tefachim high, meaning it's a Rishus HaYachid. V'nisgavim l'shvos l'mata, and you wanted to make your makam shvisa on the ground, meaning in the Rishus HaRabim. The Rebbe Hidamer called Davashu Mishum Shvos Lo Gazru Allah Bein HaShmashos. And the fact that you're making usage of a tree is not a problem, because we're subscribing to the Shita of Rebbe Adkan. So that really means that Rav Nachman gave a full confirmation that the analysis that was given in the Mishnah is absolutely correct. And it also gives us now the opportunity to recap the daf. Our first topic of discussion this morning was shlichus. If I gave my Erev over to a shliach, so he's going to go ahead and deposit where I am, ask him to do so. What if the shliach is a chereshot bekatan? That's no good. What if it's somebody who doesn't subscribe to the institution of Erev, meaning a kusi? That's also no good. What if then I ask a second person to go ahead and pick it up from him? So that would be fine, but only under the circumstances where you see the two of them meet. And in terms of the handoff, you can assume that the shliach does his shlichus, because chazaka adam osa shlichusa. Good. And then that engendered the Gemara's discussion on the Amud Aleph, whether or not chazaka adam osa shlichusa works by din d'rabbanan, or even by din d'oraisa. Machlokes Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes. Rav Nachman said it only works by din d'rabbanan. Rav Sheshes says the chazaka, this assumptions both by d'rabbanan and by d'oraisa as well. On today's Amud Aleph, Lamed Beis Amud Aleph of Erevin, three proofs brought in defense of Rav Sheshes' position, and Rav Nachman counters each one of the proofs. The last proof was when the homeowner of the field gave the basket to somebody and said, go ahead and collect, and I will take off Trumas and Maisos. He doesn't even say it. We can assume he did it. Now, that is the machlokes between Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel, and that takes us to the Amud Beis. In terms of the consideration that for the homeowner to take off Trumas and Maisos, he has to do so, but not in the ideal state of Min HaMukaf, where the Trumas and Maisos is right next to the produce, which is Mesukan. Obviously, with the person with the basket in hand is nowhere near the homeowner. So it's Eino Min HaMukaf. That's not ideal. And then in a really fascinating debate between Rebbe and Shimon Gamliel, whether or not I should compromise a little bit on my performance of the halacha so that somebody else will be spared from violating an Isser. Rebbe says that that's preferred, and Shimon Gamliel says no. You shouldn't sacrifice whatsoever. And then, I wanted to get to more of it, but the discussion Tosfos has where, according to Rebbe, where you should be sacrificing a little bit of your performance of the mitzvah to save others, how do you account for the Gemara in the beginning of Masechta Shabbos, where there the Gemara definitively says that you cannot sacrifice your an Isser Kalila to save somebody from an Isser Rabba. Okay, next Mishnah, which we covered this morning, is accessibility. The Erev has to be in a place where it's accessible to you during the Bein HaShmashos period. The fact that it's in a tree is not a problem, because our Mishnah subscribes to Rabbi, it's Bein HaShmashos, and there's no Shvus during the Bein HaShmashos period. The fact that the tree is a Rishus HaYachid, and you wanted your Makom Shvisa to be on the ground underneath, which is a Rishus HaRabim, that's a problem. And that's why the Mishnah says, if you put the Erev above 10 Tfachim, now the Erev is inaccessible. This analysis that we just gave of the Mishnah, that was a lengthy discussion, not lengthy. That was a bit of a discussion in the Gemara between Rav Nachman and other Amoraim. They arrived at this conclusion. Rav Nachman says, Yeshakawach. I arrived at this conclusion. Shmuel arrived at this conclusion as well.